This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 323 for Wednesday, June 26th, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this afternoon, Megan Townsend is back. You can find her at Oh Megan Townsend on all the social media that matters. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm busy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And you know what? I was thinking the other day, I was like, man, I haven't talked to Joel in a long time. And the last time I was supposed to be on, I couldn't be on, which I really apologize for. But it's been a bit since I've talked to you, seen you, or anything.
Yeah, it has been. And I'm busy of my own accord. It's not like I'm busy out of control. I could be less busy if I want to be. Podcasting is going well. I've been hitting most of the weeks with the Citadel Cafe. There's been a lot going on with the Spawn Chunks because of all the new snapshots and the news that's coming out. E3, of course, happened, and so there was a lot of, you know, news centered around that with Minecraft. Because there's like two more games to follow now. There's Minecraft Earth and then Minecraft Dungeons, which are separate from Minecraft, so that got very busy.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So I'm not going to talk about weather specifically, because that's against the rules, but I have been out for a run every day a week, pretty much. Like Monday to Friday, I've been out. 5 out of 7 days, I've been out running, which is fantastic. But it turns my, you know, short lunch break into about 2 hour lunch break, because you get to work out, shower, and then eat and stuff like that. So by the time I get back to work, it's a little bit later than normal. I'm enjoying it, but now I'm working until 7 o'clock at night because, of course, I've got a longer lunch, and then I eat and I clean up after dinner, and it's like 9:30, and I'm not going back to work after dinner. So I've discovered why I'm not getting more done. On some of the things that are not necessarily part of my work day, but things like, you know, editing videos, doing podcast notes, like stuff like that, I've been behind on. And it's because I'm not going back into the studio after dinner, which is probably a healthy thing, but it's also just like, I used to accomplish so much more. And it's like, well, that's because you're not working until 11 o'clock.
Right. Yeah. I feel like also, like, you know, having more day too, like now that we actually have, you know, longer evenings and it's still kind of light out at 9 o'clock at night. It's still,
well, and
I don't know, it's nice. Like, it feels like you can justify being up a little bit later, but.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Or at least being outside or being away from techie stuff. Like I am way more inclined to sit on my balcony and enjoy either dinner, a drink, or dessert with a podcast than I am to be sitting inside in front of the computer or in front of the TV watching Netflix. Mm-hmm.
And see, I wish I had a balcony. That's like the one thing that I want is a balcony.
I grill so much that I can't live in a place without one. So for apartments, as far as they go, even like a shared apartment space, like a rooftop patio with a barbecue, I wouldn't, like, I want my own. I need that outside space. My place gets so warm that I need to be able to at least sit outside. And I find for me, like, it's much cooler outside than it is in my apartment at, let's say, like 7 or 8 p.m. Just because of the way that the building warms up and releases the heat and all that kind of stuff. So I've been really enjoying just sitting out in the backyard and just watching the trees, really. It sounds silly, but, you know, I mean, I have a podcast going, but I'm someone that lives by myself. I have the bad habit of like making dinner and then plopping down in front of Netflix or YouTube or whatever, and just kind of like watching something while I'm eating. And I've been really enjoying the less, like the lower screen time, and just throwing a podcast on my iPhone on speaker and just like leaving the phone on the table out on the balcony and eating outside. And I eat outside as long as it's not raining or cold, then I'll eat outside because it's such a nice experience. And I had some, I think I was out on the patio, like a restaurant patio, for the first time, like a couple of weeks ago. Took my mom out to dinner and like,
oh, really?
It was one of those things where it's just like, it was the first time because it had been such a long, wet spring around here that patios really hadn't gotten going, right?
Yeah, so we didn't have a spring. It was just like, ah, it's kind of rainy. It's still kind of like, you know, getting out of winter. Whoa, hey, it's summer now. And it's like, okay. Yeah. I feel like global warming is real, man, because like rain didn't happen until like May.
Oh,
and it's supposed to usually come around in April.
I've been trying to keep up. I mean, like I like to think of myself as an environmental, a green person. You know, like I do my best to, you know, recycle and compost and do all the things that I can that are within my control from an apartment. There's not a whole lot you can
do. Yeah, it's true.
But I've been, with a federal election coming up, and we won't get into politics because I try to steer away from that on this show. I have been just keeping abreast of issues and what, you know, Canada, what different parties are approaching as far as environmental law and stuff is concerned. And Canada, I think I did mention it. I might have mentioned it last week with Brockett as just kind of like a side note, kind of like a joke. But Canada approved an oil pipeline and declared a climate emergency on the same day.
Now, I won't get into it.
It's not as black and white as that. I've done enough digging to realize that I know it's not, you know, it's not black and white. But one in some of the research that I've been finding, you know, in terms of like you're talking about global warming, this is why I brought this up. I read an article on CBC the other day about the permafrost in the Arctic melting. And there was a photo of like a hiker or a journalist next to like a sinkhole because like the ground that surrounds certain areas is part ice, part dirt. And when the ice is melting, it just turns to mud or giant holes open up underneath what would be the surface and things start to cave in because it's never it never got warm enough to actually thaw. And now that it is, it's becoming a big problem. There's, I can't remember the name of the community, but there's a community in Yukon where they're isolated on one side of a river. And they can't cross it because the river's melted, which it has never done before. So normally it's just a permanent ice bridge across this river. That's how they access, you know.
Right.
And so they can't do that. And they've never built a bridge because they've never had to. So there's some things like that that are changing rapidly that you don't necessarily hear about so much in the South. Usually in southern urban areas, it's mostly about air pollution and, you know, emissions and you know, trying to reduce, like, you know, it's all about electric cars and stuff like that. Whereas people, you know, in more, especially in a country as large as Canada, in rural areas, you're talking about like being cut off from access to everything because the road is washed away or, you know, the big, larger issues that are happening. And it, you know, as much as we all try to do our little part, I feel like right now there's just so much in the hands of big government.
Yeah, big governments, big corporations.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I have so much anxiety about, like, the environment and, like, how it's impacting everything. Like, I actually, like, have been woken up from, like, nightmares about it. Like, it's, like, I think about it so much. I don't, like, for someone who's not in, like, sustainability or, like, as a profession or anything, I think about environment stuff way too much. And, like, I saw this, like, dark joke online. It's like, oh, you're worried about not being able to pay your student loans? Don't worry about it. We're all going to be dead in 20 years, so just spend that money you would do on a vacation while you're alive, and then it's all fine. So I was just like, man, may as well just live now, YOLO, because literally, it's like, we're not going to be here in 20 years. But, like, I found, like, so, like, you know, someone I follow on Tumblr was just very kindly putting out this like post and are just like, for anyone who's anxious about, like, the environment and pollution, like, here's some good things. So, like, I know London planted like a 7-mile bee habitat or something. You know, there's, Maine has banned styrofoam. You know, there's just all these, like, you know, people are, like, cities and countries are doing, like, these small little things to try and help the environment. And, like, you know, the ozone layer is repairing itself a little bit more every single day. And even China is kind of now, like, trying to work on stuff to clean up their air. I don't know if cities like Beijing, who I think is, like, the major contributor of terrible greenhouse gas emissions, that city is smoggy.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, like, the article that I read, and I'll try to find it for the show notes, but the article was just like, you know, everybody here is like, let's ban plastic bags. It's like Canada, you know, contributes like something stupid, like 3% or 5% of world, like, plastic pollution. Canada's not the problem, you know, like, it's, you have to get plastic bags behind, you know, or banned in, like, China or, like, massive countries that don't have that kind of
Like the amount of packaging that's in stuff, like make it more sustainable packaging.
All that
And
kind of
then,
thing.
yeah, and then on that, like a lot of people are like, everyone should go vegan. It's like, well, vegan is a buzzword now for a lot of companies. And like, I'm not knocking veganism at all. Actually, this is like a something I wanted to actually really research a lot more. But the whole idea behind veganism originally came about to be like environmentally sustainable and environmentally helpful. Like it helps the environment. It kind of the idea was to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that come from
Oh,
like meat
like,
factories
oh
and things
yeah,
like that, like
absolutely.
the overpopulation of cows that cause a lot of methane gas in the air and things like that. But now that vegan has become such a buzzword, it's like, oh, we're all using all vegan products now. Like we're like, you know, the shoe store, one of the shoe stores in the mall that I work at is they're saying we're 100% vegan now. That's great. But what is your stuff made out of? Most likely plastic, because that's vegan. So the greenhouse gas emissions that came out of making those products, and also how are they going to be recycled or dealt with afterwards? Like, is that environmentally ethical? So like you know, before the buzzword was like natural, now then it became organic, and now it's vegan. And it's like, what's the next buzzword going to be for like products? And I feel like it's going to become sustainable. Is that going to be the next buzzword? Is sustainable? But they
Well,
actually have to, I think you have to prove that it
if
is
you can, yeah, if
sustainable.
you can prove, if you can prove it, sure. And that's,
Yeah.
and then one of the things that, on a positive note, I think it might have been something on Facebook where like, no, it doesn't really matter in terms of the actual impact that Canada is looking at, or communities in Canada are looking at banning plastic bags. However, as a world leader, setting that example means that more and more smaller countries that might do it, it has that trickle down effect of like, you got to lead by
Yeah.
example. Even if you're only affecting 3% or 5% of that pollution, it's
Yeah.
still a chunk. And if you can convince other people or put the pressure on other, environmental or other governments to kind of follow suit. I think the problem is that some of the larger countries in the world don't have the same kind of democracy where the people can put the pressure, on the government to do that,
Yeah.
right? And so
Yeah.
it's an interesting kind of situation globally. But I'm seeing more and more news from, England, France, Canada,
Yeah.
the US
You're,
sort
like
of.
Europe, I feel like the Europe and the Commonwealth are all very dedicated to it, which is nice. And like, and it China, like China does sound like it's making a lot of waves. Like any, like they think they were fully scrapping an original like idea they had to build something or like to clean up their air, and then like they were like, okay, maybe that's not environmentally friendly. Let's come up with a whole other idea. So like things are changing, I think, in a positive direction. But I think my fear is it's like, will it change in time
Fast
is the
enough. Yeah,
thing. Like,
that's
will
the
it change
thing.
in time?
That's the
The rate
thing.
at which our planet is heating up versus the rate at which people are actually doing something about it, I don't think is relative. I think the planet's heating up faster than we're actually managing to catch up with fixing the problem.
Yes, yeah, and I'm struggling to
And I
remember
think
the
that's
name of
where I'm
the
having a lot of anxiety about
Yeah,
it.
there's a BBC series that we covered on the show not too long ago. It was this year sometime, somewhere in the winter time. I want to say January or February. I was talking about it. It's a David Attenborough, production. And I'm just struggling on the name. I'm trying to look it up on our website right now, but it's one of those things where oh, Our Planet, the Netflix original Our
Oh,
Planet,
yes.
that one. Really good information in terms of like, this is where we're going. This is how dire it is. But a lot of the time, each episode would end with like a, and here's a positive thing. Like, here's an example where fisheries in the Philippines said no more shark fishing in this area. And lo and behold, 10 years later, the entire area is completely rehabilitated. Like it does not take that long to
Yeah.
make the right choices. The problem is that there's usually a greedy, people in power that those choices don't benefit, so then they don't get done.
Yeah.
And this is something I don't want to get too far into because I haven't done enough research to really cite proper examples and stuff like that. But yeah, like I feel like there are some positive examples, but like even for me, pardon me, I looked into some solar alternatives for apartment people. Like how can you for something as simple as like, well, I have a number of mobile devices that I need to plug in and charge, and it would probably the things that I use the most would very easily be able to be charged by a solar panel if I hung it in my window.
Yeah.
The problem is finding one, something small enough, and two, something that's not cost prohibitive. Now, I can appreciate that in the long run, I might be saving money and probably using less power and, you know, contributing to the lower power consumption on, you know, the grid here in the city. But I don't want to spend $400 on a solar panel, you know, and even the small designer ones, like, oh, here's this cool thing I saw on Kijiji. It's still $200 American just because someone now has designed it and it looks pretty. And now I'm paying them. Granted, they're a good designer, but it's still like, yeah, but this, I need something functional. I don't necessarily need it to be, you know, super fancy. Fashionable, you know? And I find that, you know, as someone that has done like a grassroots, you know, Kickstarter, you know, publishing thing, you can't have mass production and super, super low consumer prices because you're a mom and pop shop. Like this thing that's probably being machined and made in New York City, of course it costs $200 because all of the people along that pipeline have to get paid. But there just needs to be more accessibility to the average person that has like the average mean to lower than mean income and have solar alternatives and those kind of things be available to them.
Absolutely.
You know, and if you can do that, then I think a lot of people are just like, oh, wait a minute. So if I spend $100 or less, you know, on this solar panel thing for my, you know, I can sit in my window and then I can use it to charge, like, say if it's like a family, you know, like you've got your kids' cell phones, you got your cell phone, you got your spouse's cell phone, you know, and all that kind of stuff is just no longer being plugged into the wall. Then like you will more than likely see, you know, at least a noticeable drop in, say, your power bill, especially if you can hook it up to something that is like a television. The problem is that larger appliances and larger things, they need like a converter. Like you have to turn solar energy into electricity. You can't just, it's not just a simple plug and play, you know, like a USB, you know, into a computer. In a way, we're kind of spoiled with personal electronics into how, quote unquote, simple it is to just plug it in and use it. But the problem is that all of the conversion is happening outside of your house. So like somewhere's either it's, you know, coal power, hydropower, solar, wind, whatever, it's all being converted into the electricity that's being brought into your house. So if you are collecting the energy yourself, the conversion thing is problematic. There's fire hazards. Like it's not a small box. It becomes a large ordeal. And I looked at some people, like, you know, engineering students and stuff that had done it in their apartments, and people in, you know, overseas that had done it, you know, to get electricity into, you know, remote areas and things like that. But it's not a small undertaking. Like, I mean, you can't do it if you don't own the space, right? Like it becomes very difficult when you're just renting. But it's an interesting, I guess, field or hobby. I'm not sure what you want to look into it, but like looking it up on Pinterest, you know, like, you know, personal solar panels and stuff like that. It actually is a pretty fun rabbit hole to go down in the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, you quickly realize that it's not accessible to you, but you might learn a few things. I mean, you're just like, okay, well that's neat. It's not something I can do, but you know, having the possibilities are, you know, out there. I would think more small businesses or people that own apartment buildings, you know, could do stuff like that. That could, you know, then make those apartments more attractive to people. But it's not really at the lowest consumer level.
I agree. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's part of the problem. If you want everyone on board with it, you got to get people on board. And like in the realm of like, you know, sustainability and banning single use plastics and stuff, like I'm glad that that's being something that's talked about. Again, like you were saying, we only make up Canada only makes up 3% of the world's plastic intake. A lot of people are now starting to be like, okay, well, how is this going to affect people with disabilities, though? Because a lot of the time, straws were created for people who can't lift a glass.
Right.
Right? It was meant to be an easy thing to, like, slurp out of, to actually have a drink if you're, you know, so someone doesn't always have to keep lifting a glass to your mouth. And in some cases, like, you know, some people are allergic to metal, so the metal ones and the steel ones don't quite work. They're difficult to clean. The glass ones are a little easier to clean because you can see through them, but they're more prone to breakage, which is more, you know, prone to injury. Paper ones, while biodegradable, may have some sort of adhesive in them that someone may have an allergic reaction to. The only thing that is, like, foolproof, easy to use for a lot of people is a single-use plastic straw. But how, like, but then you get into this realm of like, okay, well, who actually needs a straw? Maybe people don't look super disabled. Like, I know people who have EHL, EDS, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome or something. They have, it's like a musculature joint degenerative disease. Mm-hmm. They don't always look physically disabled, but like their body is basically deteriorating from the inside out. But they, you know, maybe having a better day, so they don't need to walk around with a cane. Can someone police, oh, you don't look disabled enough, so you don't need a straw? Like, that's, you know, becoming stuff that, you know, people are trying to think about in other realms as well. So it's we need to find something that works for everybody. But it's difficult. Like, I don't think there's going to be one foolproof thing that works for everyone.
No, and I mean,
which is like, a problem. And like, you know, I don't want to make it super like ableist only, because there are some people, like, you know, I feel like a lot of people with disabilities lose out on a lot of stuff as it is anyway.
Yeah, I did a quick Google search, and it looks like Canada only recycles 11% of its plastic waste. I was trying to find the stat for like how much plastic pollution does Canada contribute to the world, just because I'm curious about my range from that, my memory on that article, whether I'm getting it right or not. But I mean, I'm sure people can find it, you know, quickly enough. It was a CBC article, and again, I'll try to find, I should have all of them in my inbox. I get a newsletter every day, just like the headlines and stuff from CBC. But yeah, it's one of those things where I don't know. I mean, I agree that straws are bad and litter is bad, but I don't know that focusing on plastic straws is really the answer.
I don't know. The video with the turtle is pulling the straw out of its nose. Yes, that's a bad thing. That's a bad thing that humans have contributed.
But how often does that happen, right? I mean,
I feel like more often than you'd think, honestly. But
yeah, but still, compared to plastic bags and, you know, and all that other kind of stuff.
You know, cutting open whales who have like 10 pounds of plastic bags in them. And there's like a plastic island somewhere in the Pacific that's like the size of Texas. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's a problem.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. No, and that's where I think, you know, you focus on, well, it's just like any other problem. I mean, and this is just my opinion, because I'm not a scientist, and I've not done extensive research, but you know, focus on the things that are causing the most damage and are causing the climate to change the fastest. Like, prioritize, you know, are plastic drinking straws a problem? Yes. Are they the biggest problem? No.
No.
You know, so maybe focus on things like, oh, I don't know, coal power and, you know, like stuff, stuff that's really like stuff like the permafrost melting. Like, you know, I mean, obviously that's a symptom, not a cause, but like focus on the things that are really contributing to, you know, the warming of the planet and that kind of stuff. And I think that if you attack the larger things first, then, you know, then it'll be at least doable. But the problem is that the largest things are usually tied to the largest industries, which are tied to a lot of money. And, you know, and we go down that rabbit hole. So, but anyway,
it's like Walmart's whole like 5 cents per bag. It's like, no, you're still making bags, though.
Yeah.
You're still making those bags. Like, maybe stop making the bags if you want.
I remember,
to be
environmentally conscious. And this has been true ever since I was a kid. I remember vacationing on Prince Edward Island here in the Maritimes. They've always had different laws. I feel like plastic bags might be banned now on PEI. If you're a listener in PEI, let me know. But I know for sure that you could not get tin cans, because whenever we got a Coke, you know, you're out with your family and you're going for, you know, you want to get a pop at the corner store, it's in a bottle. Because the glass bottles were easier to recycle.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, the Coke and all the different software companies, they couldn't sell cans anywhere on the island because of pollution and recycling and all that kind of stuff. It was easier to recycle the glass. So it was stuff like that. And that's been in place for a long, long time, but out of necessity, because it's an island and there was, when I was a kid, there was no bridge. It was a ferry. So it was a pain in the butt to ship stuff off the island to be recycled or disposed of. So like you had to come up with, you know, solutions that worked for the province. And, I have to say though, I've been hiking around the province quite a bit in the last year or two, and I'm doing more this summer. I always pick up trash when I go, if I see it, but it's not something that I see a lot of. I see it more
in the city.
Oh, in the city, sure. Yeah. But that's because city people are disgusting. It's any better. Like you should still not, it's worse because there's garbage cans on every bloody street corner. But I very seldom, you know, have that moment where I have to go like, ugh. You know, I roll my eyes and I be the curmudgeon and, you know, get off my lawn and then pick up someone else's trash on a hike. I never see trash on a hike. usually the people that are out there take, like, they pick up after themselves, or they're picking up after other people. So like, there's just that mentality among usually that crowd is just like, you know, keep the trail as you found it. And so I've really not had any issues that I've seen. The only time that I feel like I have seen any kind of trash, it's been along a beachfront that's part of the hike. And that's probably not because it was left there. It's probably washed ashore there from, you know, whatever, whatever source it came from, whether someone tossed it over the side of the boat, whether it got, you know, picked up somewhere else or whatever. It could be from anywhere, really. Anyway, we should probably get into some of the meat of the show.
So some happier stuff.
Some happier stuff. I say happier stuff. What have you been watching, Megan?
Well, do you want me to start? We're going to jump off of that? Okay. I've been watching Good Omens, which I think is kind of appropriate because we were just talking about the potential end of the world, and this is kind of what Good Omens is about. But it's happy. It's the happy end of the world. I'll get into it in a second. Good Omens. I started watching this. I honestly had no choice but to watch it because my roommate was like, we're watching this, deal with it, sit down, get yourself ready. Good Omens is it was a book originally by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman, and Bethley loves Neil Pratchett, and I've read a lot of Neil Gaiman, so like it's kind of a best of both worlds sort of thing. Oh my god, I can't talk today. And it's really interesting. It's about this demon named Crowley, who's played by David Tennant, and this angel named Aziraphale, played by Michael Sheen, and they're just like basically responsible for watching the earth. The good side, who'd be the angels, are responsible for making things, you know, good and like watching it and making sure people are happy and that, you know, they're following a good path according to like the great plan, the omnipotent plan that God has. And then the demon side, like the dark side, are responsible for creating corruption and discourse among the people. So they kind of balance each other out. And basically both of them just get to the point where they're just so happy just living on earth that they're just like, you know what? I just don't want to really do anything. They just kind of get really comfy in their ways. Like Aziraphale owns a little bookshop. He's obsessed with books and he just wants to, you know, eat food and drink tea and be happy and, you know, live like a little curmudgeonly old man in a bookshop, right? Like that, he's like creature comforts, which is really funny because he's meant to be an angel who's very selfless and all, you know, self-sacrificing. And he's like, I just want to hoard all my books. I want to eat all my food. I want to drink all my wine, have all my tea or my hot cocoa and just enjoy my life, which is seems like kind of opposite for an angel. And then Crowley, who's meant to be a demon, he's just like, I kind of just like people too much and I don't really want to screw around with them. And they end up becoming really good friends. Like they live in London and they're like best friends from opposite sides. They just hang out together all the time. Like they just kind of kept running into each other from all these different centuries. And Aziraphale was the angel who was guarding the gate of Eden. And he was he was issued this flaming sword to protect the gate of Eden. And he ended up giving it to Adam when Adam and Eve left the Garden of Eden to go venture out into the world. And he was like, she's expecting and it's dangerous out there. And like, you know, there's a bunch of creatures and they needed to protect themselves. I was doing it for them. And there's this ongoing joke of like, it'd be funny if like, and then Crowley was like the snake responsible for getting Eve to eat the apple in the first place. And like their banter was, or Crowley said, it would be funny if I did the right thing and you did the wrong thing. Like I did the right thing by making them eat the apple, but you did the wrong thing by giving them the flaming sword. And that ends up becoming like a key, you know, point in the show. I love the show. I've never read the book myself, but Bethley, who's read it cover to cover at least 15 times, has said that like out of like any book adaptation for something, it is the most faithful and most accurate and best depiction of a book being turned into something that she's ever seen. It does change some stuff. There are some things that are added. What's his name? Mike Hamm? Oh God. I'm forgetting his name. John Hamm, that's who it is. He plays the angel Gabriel. Gabriel's not in the book at all. But Neil Gaiman specifically asked John Hamm to be part of the show. And John Hamm originally said no, because he's like, I don't want to screw anything up because he loved the book. And then I guess Neil Gaiman was like, well, how about we make you the angel Gabriel? He's not in the book. And John Hamm was like, yes, please. I'd like that very much. and then just kind of jumped. Like, a lot of people love the book so much that they were afraid to do the show.
Oh,
until
wow.
Neil Gaiman, like, specifically was just like, no, I want you to do this. Here's why. So Neil Gaiman had, like, a lot of hand in the show itself. Like, he helped adapt it for the screen. He was there in production almost throughout the entire thing, and, you know, was really, really proud of it. And he was making a lot of the executive decisions in place of Terry Pratchett as well, who had passed away a couple of years ago. And he has said, he's like, I think Terry would really love this.
Mm.
It is amazingly perfect. It's got a really, really nice, dry sense of humor. Like that really, it's very typical British humor, which yes. I love. It's my favorite.
Yeah,
and
me too.
There's so many gags that happen, but they don't like hit you over the head with them. It's like a one-time gag. And that's it. Like, it's great. I almost thought I watched it twice, like the whole series twice. It was funnier the second time I watched through it because I noticed more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was able to pick up more. I'm like, oh, that's what they were talking about that time. That's really funny, actually. And it's I really like it. It's really good. If you can watch it, do you have Amazon Prime, Joel?
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
Have you signed up for a free trial yet?
That's a
this sounds
really
like an ad. It's not. I swear to God.
No, it's not. It's a really good question. Chances are, I probably have, but it's been around for so long, I don't remember if and when I did that. The problem with Amazon Prime for me is that I don't buy enough on Amazon to warrant the free shipping. And I have to say that it's not so much now, but previously my entertainment budget was pretty slim. So Netflix was kind of like what I had and what I was watching. And since Game of Thrones is over, I've canceled Crave and HBO. So that's $20 a month that I was spending. That's no longer being spent. But I could look into Amazon Prime because I'm hearing great things, obviously from you, from other people on our Discord about Good Omens. I've seen other films and other projects that Neil Gaiman has been involved in, and I've not read any of his books, I'm embarrassed to say, but I know he's very well regarded, and I mean,
yes,
I would think that anything that he has been this involved in, if it's your taste, like if it's your kind of show, it's probably a good kind of show, you know? And it sounds
it's
right up my alley.
Really good. It's, oh my God, it would be. Like the whole time I was watching, I'm like, Joel would love this. Because mm-hmm. it's, and like there was one part, there's a couple different stories that bounce around a lot. It feels like it's out of order and it kind of bounces around a whole bunch, but it makes sense as to why. There's this whole subplot with these kids. And I don't want to say too much about it. Like mm-hmm. anyone who's watched the show is going to know exactly what kids I'm talking about. And why they're a big part of it. But their dialogue just seems really haphazard. Like they start on one topic and then like in 3 seconds they're on something entirely different. But my second watch through, I was just like, these are actually really funny because this is how kids would talk. Kids just like bounce around with all these different conversations. They start somewhere, they get somewhere else. It's like, how'd you get there? And that's just how kids talk. Mm-hmm. They actually cast like 11-year-olds in all the roles. So it's like this natural banter for these kids that just, you know, go off on tangents and without any real, you know, purpose, I guess, for it. Mm. And it just kind of works. Like as an adult, it's hard to watch. Like the first time I watched it, I was like, wow, doesn't make a lot of sense. Why these scenes kind of seem a little draggy. The second time I watched it, I was like, okay, this is kind of reminding me what it was like to be a kid and how it would just kind of bounce around and like, you know, you have child ADD where you're just, you know, all over the place with all your thoughts and ideas and just, you know, like all these games you want to play. Like it takes you right back to being like a kid, like a young, young kid and all the imagination that comes with it. And so like, again, the second watch through was probably the best. If you can watch it with subtitles, do so. I always watch everything with subtitles because I find like someone may say something in a certain way or just so quietly that I miss it. So having subtitles on there kind of helps me fill in the blanks personally. And there's a lot of like things and gags that I missed the first time around that when I watched it with subtitles again, I was able to pick up on it more. But I loved the show. It was really enough for me to watch it twice. It was
nice.
It was excellent. Yeah.
That's really cool. I might actually have some stuff that I have to pick up for the studio in the next little while. So, I mean, I might look at taking advantage of Amazon Prime. And I think too, it's just, it's different for Canadians because stuff is more expensive on Amazon. You know, Prime is great because it helps with shipping, which is more expensive to Canada. But then you also don't have the same selection of content on Prime. However, I also support and would like to support more people on Twitch. And as some people have been so kind to me as to use their Amazon Prime subscription via Twitch to support me, I could probably knock a couple of birds with one stone, support someone on Twitch, get Amazon Prime for the shipping, but then also do the streaming services as well. So
yeah,
I'll have a huge whammy. Yeah, so I'll have to check it out.
But even just like with the free trial though, like all Bethley got was the free trial, and she's watching it as many times as she can until the free trial is over. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure my free trial is long over, you know, just because I'm using a different email address specifically. Well, I guess I could do that too. I'm an early adopter when it comes to this kind of stuff, so I probably tried it right away. But that was probably also back when I was ordering a lot of art books, which are heavy and tend to benefit greatly from free shipping, because the book itself is usually $60 plus shipping and all that kind of stuff.
$30.
Yeah, but then I switched to Kickstarter because I was supporting independent publishers, and then I switched to not allowed to buy more art books until I read the ones that I have. So that's currently where I am with ordering stuff online. So I don't really shop online unless it's practical, because all of the frivolous stuff, it's like, no, I've not done or read or finished the thing that I bought last time, so I should not be buying more stuff because I don't need more stuff in my place. But no, Good Omens sounds good, and I like it's both of the really actors involved. I like David Tennant quite a bit, so that'll be a fun watch if I can get in there and try either get the free trial or maybe switch over, because I'm having a lot of trouble with Netflix. I've not been finding the things that I want to watch on it, and the things that I would normally have good faith in, I am struggling. I've been trying to watch The Last Kingdom. And it's good. It's high production value, but it is slow. I get halfway through an episode and I'm up doing something else. Like it's just not gripping me. I tried for the second time to get through the second season of Jessica Jones because the third season just dropped. I can barely get through 20 minutes of an episode of that because it's just the same. It's the same constantly. She's always in the same mood. It's always the same kind of dialogue. Everybody is just grumpy the whole time. And I'm just like, it's not, for whatever reason, I don't know what formula they did not take from Daredevil, which I devoured when it came out. It just did not translate to Luke Cage and to Jessica Jones. And then everything else that's new on Netflix, like, hey, it's new and it's from Netflix and it's a zombie thing. And then, hey, it's new from Netflix and it's another zombie thing. And it goes on from there. Or it's a horror thing, or it's like, hey, it's sci-fi, but it's a sci-fi horror thriller. It's like, no, sci-fi adventure. Like,
are you talking about Mother?
I tried to watch that too.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet. But
I bailed about probably near the end of the first act, and it's not bad. It's just like once another person got introduced, which is not, I guess, is not really a spoiler.
That's in the trailer.
Yeah, once the other person comes into the airlock, I just kind of rolled my eyes like, okay, great. So now it's going to be a story of mistrust, and it's going to be predictable. And any kind of originality that it had with a robot and a child being raised by the robot, which I was glued to the screen. And then they introduced a third person. I was like, nope, just all of a sudden got real boring. And I talked to my dad, who had watched it and finished it. And he had mentioned that he thought it was okay, but he really didn't like the ending. And I was like, well, what was wrong with it? And he goes, well, I don't want to spoil it. So he just said, it was really weird. And I immediately said, like, that is a problem that I see with a lot of stuff on Netflix, is that I'll try to watch an original film and it's weird at the end for weird's sake. It's just because they want to, or they can, push the envelope, but they're so worried about whether or not they could, they don't stop to think whether or not they should, you know?
Right,
It's like the Titan, I think it was the Titan or the Titans. It was about genetically altered people going to a different planet.
Oh.
Cool concept. Cool concept.
Yeah.
Crap ending. It went off the deep end about midway through Act 3, and you're just like, oh man. And then you just feel cheated. Like you feel like you just lost the last 2 hours of your life. It becomes a very simple plot with a very stupid or bizarre ending. And you're just like, nope, not at all. It really kind of pulled the rug out from underneath me. It kind of feels like what sci-fi was like back before it was cool, you know, like, cause you'd have all these weird films in the '80s and there'd be the people that loved them, but then trying to convince your non sci-fi friends to watch them was a feat because they were so weird. And then like the Star Trek films happened and Star Trek Next Gen. And like those things became a little bit more grounded and a little bit more story became king as opposed to just being weird in sci-fi for the sake of being weird in sci-fi. And
yeah,
I'm also, you know, I'm spoiled by some of the adventure, you know, in Star Wars and things like that. But Star Wars doesn't get weird necessarily, right? Like it doesn't go really existential on you. It stays pretty true to form. And in some ways people complain about it being a little bit too safe and predictable, but like at the same time, when I go to a Star Wars film, I don't necessarily want to be pushed outside the box.
Like I know exactly what I'm expecting with it.
Yeah, like a really good example is Annihilation. Did you see that?
No.
Alistair and I went to go see it in the theater together, and both of us were just kind of silent on the way home, kind of like processing, like, I think I liked it. It's like, I can't find any fault with it, but I can't really tell you anything that I thought was really good either. It was just weird. The whole thing was just really strange, but it was dealing with the kind of sci-fi that just you don't see in pop culture sci-fi. You don't see in the Marvel movies or Pixar or, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I'm starting to feel like my tastes in sci-fi might be a little bit more niche than just like, yeah, I like it all. You know, like it's a little bit more focused on.
It's like mine, like with fantasy too. Like I started trying to watch this show on Netflix. It's a Korean drama. So I don't know if a lot of it is like being, you know, lost in translation because it's being translated from English, but it's called the Arthdal Chronicles. And it's like a Korean period piece. It's kind of like the beginning of time. It's in like this fantasy kind of realm, and you know, you get two different clans, and you get, you know, one clan is blue blood and one is red blood, and you know, if they have an offspring, their blood's purple and it gives them weird powers. And they haven't really delved into too much like with K-dramas. Like they play the long game with K-dramas. Like they're always, you know, long drawn out episodes. So right now there's looks like there's gonna be 12 episodes in this season, and each one is about, I don't know, an hour, and they do move very slowly, but they like to play the long game with it. So on one hand, it's a really slow burn, which allows for a lot of very slow contemplative human moments, but at the same time it's like, is that boring to watch? And I got through the first episode and I liked it. And I will probably watch more, but I may take my time watching it. It's not one of those shows that I feel like I could binge. Like, and then you get the flip side where you get shows that, you know, you binge at first, and then you're like, wow, something stupid just happened, looking at you, the 100. And then you just, it ruins the whole thing for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm just like, I can't, I don't want to continue with this. If this is how you're going to go with it, then that's dumb.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah,
man.
I can't even remember the last time I watched the 100. I watched the first two seasons, I think, and I quite enjoyed them. But then it started to get, like you said, you know, some of the decisions that were made. I'm not sure if we're talking about the same one. Are you talking about like a current decision with the 100?
I'm talking about a decision that happened probably like in the second season.
Yeah, we might be talking about the same thing. I don't want to get into it in case people are you know, unfamiliar or take us down a tangent, just because it is on Netflix and stuff like that. But is it Arthdal? Arthdal? Is that the?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure I found it. Just so it looks interesting. Like it looks like high production value.
It is. It's very high production value. It's beautiful. And like what's interesting is that even like in the first episode, there's very, very clear like cultures, which is neat. Like it's like very clear cultures. Like there's, you know, one language. It kind of sounds a little bit like Klingon, if I'm being honest with you, but like there's one group that has one language. There's another group that has another language. They have translators from each clan that kind of like, they're trying to negotiate like, you know, a sort of, you know, alliance. Like one of them is really good at harvesting, cultivating, and one of them is on very, very fertile, abundant land. So they, you know, the group that's really good at cultivating, which I guess on they look a little bit more quote unquote civilized because they're in cleaner clothes and, you know, they look a bit more regal, whereas the group who's on more abundant land, like fertile land, they're more wild looking, like they kind of wear skulls as jewelry and
yeah, they look
and
more tribal
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's the more, you know, this one group is talking to, you know, the group of fertile land saying, "Hey, we can all, you know, live peacefully and coexist if we can, you know, make use of all the land together and we can create a whole nation, like one nation under, you know, this, you know, have everyone have their own cultures and things and different gods, but live in a peaceful, prosperous land." And that was the idea. But this, you know, tribal leader was basically like, "Nah, no thanks. You know, we do our own thing. You grow things we don't even eat. So no, bye." And then, you know, the leader of this other group basically sends them a gift that's full of disease. What does that sound like?
Yeah.
Right?
No, so, there are but, no but new ideas.
No. Well, but like, I'm like, it's, you know, it's actually pointing those people as like bad guys, which is kind of nice on one hand. It's like they start out being the good guys and they're actually the bad guys, and it's kind of nice to kind of have that bit of history changed in favor of the people who are like being killed. It's like, no, hey, these people were like kind of peaceful for the most part and people just came in and killed them. And it's like nice having that, you know, affirmation of it, I suppose. But it's, I don't know, it's real slow. It's a real slow watch. About halfway through, I got a little bit bored and I had to take a break. Then I came back to it. But it is a slow watch, a slow burn. But having watched other K-dramas that follow the same romance formula before, they're all like that.
Right.
You can take your time with them. If you take too long, though, then you forget who everyone is.
Well, you know, and that's a bunch of different names. Probably some of the problems that I have with The Last Kingdom is that it's a cool fantasy show. It's about Britain before it was Britain. And, you know, it's about the Danes and, you know, all establishing the first kingdom of New England, or not New England,
so yeah,
of great. England. No. It's long after that. It's
Alfred the Great.
Alfred the Great. I'm not sure if the Great is after his name, but
I think that's how he's known in history.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, now, I don't know, but Alfred is the first king. He's the self-proclaimed, or I can't remember exactly the details again because it's been so long since I've seen season one. And it's one of those shows that was like, it was like an A&E or an extended cable production, and then it got canceled and then Netflix picked it up. So then like season two and three are Netflix original stuff. And the problem that I have mostly with it is that Uhtred, the main character, in some ways he's charming and in other ways he's an idiot. And bad stuff happens to him because he's an idiot and he doesn't learn from his mistakes. And
I'm chalking that up to him being like also in the show like 15.
Well,
he's supposed to be like a kid.
And he's young, and it's also a very machismo kind of environment where like men are basically being pigs all the time. But the problem is that he doesn't seem to learn from any mistakes, and yet you're supposed to be feeling bad for him when he's like captured or tortured or whatever. And you're just like, no, you are here not because you have bad luck. You are here because you are stupid.
Because you ran your mouth and you got a little bit cocky.
Exactly.
And
or you stabbed the wrong person because you couldn't hold your temper. It's like, oh, for the love of Pete. Like, so that kind of stuff is getting, it's getting a little bit old in that way. I do enjoy. Now, I can't say I'm familiar enough with history to know how true it is. But if it's even remotely true, it's kind of neat to kind of understand like what, you know, kingdoms were part of, you know, Northumbria and all that kind of stuff for a while, and how they switched allegiances and how Danish culture was, you know, appropriated and all that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff is kind of neat. And as far as action goes as well, it's also really good. Like it's not a swashbuckling thing where like you've got a sword fight between the main, you know, antagonist and protagonist that lasts 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. The battles are 3 minutes. Like it's just like slash, slash, somebody dies. That's it. it's not overly drawn out, which is good.
Yeah. Which is nice.
Yeah. So, for whatever reason, like the pacing on the third season is just real, real slow. And Again, like it just seems to be telling the same story over again. Like you're just watching him make the same decisions, but with different people, different players. It's a little bit farther along in history, but it's not a different story. It's just the same thing. So it's a cool escape. And again, high production value. Like you don't feel like you're watching a TV show. You feel like you're being sucked in, much like Game of Thrones. Like you felt like you were part of that history when you were there. You don't feel like you're watching a television show. And I do like that about it. But for whatever reason, I just have not been interested in this log recently. And because I mentioned at the top of the show that I've been trying to do more stuff outside, you know, I also, in some of the Netflix and things that I've been watching, on days where it's not nice, I also wanted something that I could kind of maybe not always have to sit and watch. Like I could maybe listen to or kind of have on in the background. So I've been watching some stand-up comedy, not normally my bag. I just find it such a crapshoot and I don't necessarily want to invest like an hour listening to somebody that I've never heard of, you know, without knowing, you know, whether or not it's going to be good. And part of that is just the Netflix, you know, choice paralysis. Like there's so many different things that you can choose from. And it's like, oh, is it going to be good? Who knows? Or I watched a couple of, you know, stand-up comedy, you know, last year and they were okay. It's like, well, I don't really, maybe it's not that they're bad. It's just that it's not my thing. But I had a friend recommend John Mulaney and say like, hey, his latest thing is now on Netflix. You should check it out. And when I searched for him, I couldn't remember the name of the special, which is Kid Gorgeous, which is the latest one from Radio City Music Hall in 2018. I just searched his name. And of course, I found his other specials. I thought, well, screw it. I'll watch the first one. Because with this kind of stuff, sometimes it's fun to kind of go back and see kind of like how their comedy develops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I did a little bit of research and found out that he used to write for Saturday Night Live. I said, okay, so the guy's probably pretty clever, you know, pretty funny. And so I watched New in Town, which was, I believe, filmed in New York in 2012. Comeback Kid is filmed in Chicago in 2015. And then, of course, Kid Gorgeous is 2018. I want to say they're all about an hour. Like, they're all pretty short. They're not, like, big 90-minute epics. It's all a pretty straightforward set. Funny enough, I actually prefer the earlier specials. I didn't find them as funny in the Chicago one and the Kid Gorgeous. I actually think I would rank them 2012, 2015, 2018 as funniest to not as funny.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I feel like the 2018 might have been just like a little bit less content. Like he was repeating himself a lot in the 2018 special.
Yeah. No, I've watched that one. I know what you mean.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of sort of a style thing and stuff like that. But I just found that so much of the content that he was talking about in 2012 was just kind of like, it felt new, you know, like it felt fresh. Now on the same tone in 2018, some of the things that he covers are things like, you know, President Trump and, you know, certain, I think he makes a couple jokes about the Catholic Church and, you know, stuff like that. So there are things that have been being made fun of by comedians for like the last 2 or 3 years in the 2018 special. Whereas in 2012, he's just kind of talking about life. There's no real social or political event that has really kind of taken the media by storm. So he's just poking fun at everything. I found that a little bit more clever. But overall, still an incredibly clever, jovial, edgy, but not in a gimmicky way.
Yeah.
You know, like he'll say a line that stuck out was like, so I was in Connecticut doing white people stuff. And he just kind of moves on. He throws that out and then he just moves on. And it's just like,
what I like about
that but it's just enough to make you kind of go, did he just, yeah, he did. And then he just kind of goes on to whatever, like he doesn't even stop for applause. And so that kind of thing I find is nice because of course he's Irish Catholic from Chicago, I believe. And his
wife is Jewish.
A very tiny person apparently, and with a big personality. He's very forthcoming. Like he's unafraid to be who he is, who is a 37 year old man that looks like he's 12. Like he puts it all out there. And I find it very well written. He'll drop something early on about like, you know, He dresses very well. I like that he has a nice presentation. He dresses in like a three-piece suit when he's on stage, which I think is very classy.
Apparently, he never used to. That's like a new thing he's done. It's like since I think
the 2012 maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Was he wearing? He's probably wearing more casual clothes in 2012.
No. He was in the three-piece suit is new, but he was definitely in a suit. Like he was definitely in a shirt and tie in all the ones that I've seen. And
yeah,
but he was definitely in a fancier setup in 2018, but I think it's right. Classy. Like it just, it gives yeah, him, like, it gives him, it makes him feel, it makes the edgier stuff that he does feel even more edgy because he looks really clean cut. Like you don't expect him to drop an F bomb. Like you don't expect him to swear, but then he does. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But I know he also uses them in like a very like timed way. Too.
Oh yeah.
Like he's not dropping them left, right, and
no,
center.
There might be two or three in the whole special.
Yeah. So yeah. They're very, very impactful.
Yeah, exactly. And I really enjoy that kind of aspect to it. But he'll make a joke, something about like, you know, yeah, this is what I wore to my first communion. And he's like, because he's joking about the fact that he looks like he's still 12.
Yeah.
But then he'll bring that up or he'll make a sideways reference to it 40 minutes later. So it matters. It matters that that first joke about the suit is there because he makes that reference again in context. You know, at the end of the act, he has this really nice way of like tying everything together. And that happens mm-hmm. a lot. Like it's not just beginning and end. It's like, there's something he'll mention in the middle and it'll be brought up again, you know, like, you know, end middle or something like that. And it just, so you really have to pay attention. You can't just not listen. Like you really have to listen to the stories that he tells. He's a good right. storyteller too, which I find really engaging. He, you know, he'll get into detail that really doesn't matter, but it paints the picture. Right. Like you don't need to know the wardrobe, time of day and yeah. you know, like sandwich that this person was eating. But in the same way, it does kind of paint you the stereotype of the kind of like New Yorker that he's talking about, that this person that he just ran into on the street that he's, you know, conveying this anecdote about. And it's yeah. I did find him very, very, very funny. And not in a laugh out loud sort of way, but just in like, I found myself watching and smiling the whole time.
Yeah.
Because he's just so tickled by everything yes. that he's telling you.
Yes.
And it's not like there's one liner that busts you up. It's just that he is just so like, he's part laughing and part in disbelief of the story that he's about to tell you.
Yeah, but he's just so earnest about everything too, yes. which is nice.
Yeah.
But I think one of my favorite ones, I think, I don't know if Netflix, but I remember seeing a clip of him and he's talking about the real estate agent he and his wife are looking at the
yes.
house. And he's like, she has like some, you know, fun mom energy. And she wanted us to have a baby more than anyone else. And she's like, no, this place could be converted into an office or a nursery, mm-hmm. like everything. This is a good backyard. You know, for some kids, you know, like she yeah. just like the way he delivered stuff was really great. And it was stuff that like, yeah, it wasn't laugh out loud stuff, but it's always very, you know, it's giggly stuff. Like it's something you're kind of just like, it's kind of.
And he has a very odd delivery, like a very odd cadence to how he speaks. He speaks like a really articulate kid, right?
Yeah.
Because like he enunciates yeah. everything. He pronounces every word clearly. Like he doesn't slur or like, for example, regionally, I say a lot of times I'll catch myself saying fur, F-E-R, when I'm saying the word for, like I'm yeah. using this for something and I'll say this is for this. Right. And it's a fur.
I'll drop
like,
a lot of G's instead like, of something. I'll say something.
Yeah, exactly. But he does not do that. It's like listening to someone read an audiobook when he's speaking. Like he enunciates yeah. everything, and it's very funny. I had actually heard a bit of his. It wasn't until I watched the 2018 special when I realized, oh, I have seen this guy before. But it would be like, you know, a 3 minute or a 6 minute clip from like the Tonight Show or, you know, the, you know, Letterman, whether or not it was Letterman or Colbert, I don't know. But it was one of those situations where he had done this small bit of his larger act on television before.
Mm-hmm.
And he's making fun of Trump. But what I like so much about it is that he doesn't, if he mentions Trump's name, he mentions it but once. And then he is forever referring to the situation as a horse loose in a hospital.
It's my favorite.
And it's so good.
Thing.
It is so funny. And he just keeps on repeating, because it's a horse, in a hospital. And you just, the more he says it, the more ridiculous it sounds, and the more you can imagine this horse like galloping around in a hospital and what kind of mayhem that would, you know, cause, right?
And he favorite, I had fired the horse catcher. I didn't know he could do that. Yeah. Like,
like that. Like, exactly. Like there's all this kind of stuff. But he never, it's so good because he talks about it in a way that everybody knows what he's talking about. They know how ridiculous it is, but he is making fun of the country and he is making fun of Trump as the president, but he's being careful not to bash the office of the president, like,
yes,
separate from the person. He's not bashing the government in that it is what it is. He's talking about how ridiculous the situation is. How the hell did we get here? And holy crap, what's going to happen next? But he's doing it in a way that is not the same as every other comedian that I've seen that just gets up there and goes, holy shit, Trump. And then everybody laughs, right? This guy at least is creating, you know, is it a metaphor, analogy? I think it's analogy. Where he's just this horse in a hospital, and it is hilarious. Now, unfortunately, I had heard it before, so it wasn't quite as funny the second time there. But if you've not seen it, and you watch the Kid Gorgeous special, and you go in and you hear this bit, like, it is really worth paying attention to the subtleties, because it's very, very well written. I quite enjoyed it.
I think that's my very first introduction with him.
More than likely,
Someone had taken that clip, put it up on a video on YouTube. And everyone's like, I love everything about this. Just the way he moves, the way he was like flinging around the microphone cable. He's like, I don't really like politics. I don't really talked about him very much. And it was like, okay, like, I think a lot of people can relate to that. Like not liking politics or not wanting to talk about them very much. But then when he launches into the whole like horse in a hospital spiel, I was like, what is this? Like, what is he getting on about? But then like, he never mentioned Trump's name the whole time.
Yeah.
But like, as you're listening, you're just like, Yeah, I can. I know exactly who he's talking about without him actually really read between the lines with everything he's saying.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. It's, I like his delivery a lot. I think he's one of my favorite comedians because he's very subtle. He's not a laugh out loud comedian by any means. Like, I've never like laughed out loud with anything that he's really said, but, I've always like kind of just chuckled and that kind of like, you know, like, you know, chuckling kind of sound that you do. But he's very engaging. Like I find every time I watch him, I can't stop watching.
Yes.
Personally.
Yeah. And he does that thing where he leads the horse to water, but you have to take the drink.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like, so he'll paint the story and he'll say, and then this happened. And then he just waits because that plus how the story started equals what's funny, but he doesn't tell you. Like he leads you right up to the end. It's like, and this is where my friend did this, and everybody goes, "Oh my god!"
Yeah,
you know, because there's something about that friend that matters. You know, like something that he had told you earlier that makes it really important. I think he was talking about a story about a home where there was a teenage party. And stuff had been stolen and destroyed. And it wasn't until like, you know, 10 or 15 years later that he found out like what and who had done it and why it mattered. And it was hilarious. But it's the kind of thing where he starts the story at the beginning of the act or the middle of the act and doesn't finish it until another separate anecdote later. And you have to put the pieces together. And his comedy stand-up is like watching a season. Right? Like you've got different little episodes throughout, and it matters that you saw episode 3 because episode 9 is going to refer to it. And it's, like I said, it's very well done. I'm not usually a stand-up guy, but it was fun. I really enjoyed, kind of kicking back and watching something different because I don't necessarily enjoy a lot of modern comedy television shows. I find them a lot of awkward comedy is in them. And that's not my thing. I'm not saying they're bad. I know that people like them, but it's not my brand of humor. Whereas what this,
like cringe comedy or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But this is the kind of thing where I really enjoy.
It's dry.
He's close. Yeah, he's close to British humor. Like he's very American. He's not at all British. Nothing about his style is British. But the
delivery is just very
It's dry. It's and very, I guess that's the through line. Yeah, the subtlety and the dryness of it is the kind of the comparison to a lot of British humor. So, but yeah, I quite like it. Well, that's going to bring us into the Internet Minute, and it is, of course, brought to you by you. If you are a supporter of the Citadel Cafe, then I, you know, thank you immensely, because you're one of the reasons that I can keep on doing this show. If you head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, you can find out how you can become a patron. You can participate in our Discord. You get bonus episodes. We're going to have to record some more of those. We haven't done any in a little while, but when they do come out, you get them as part of the benefits of being a patron. And we are up one patron from last month, so I much appreciate it. Yeah, so we're pushing on forward. Obviously, I'm always looking to bring that up. I think we're at 19 right now, but 20 in July would be good, because we're coming up on a new month. It's now the 26th of June, so having a new person in there is always a good thing. It contributes to the conversation. And there's lots of really cool stuff that happens during the week that is sometimes not related to the show. Like, we talk about Lego a lot in the Discord. There's a lot of food talk. There's a lot of recipes and stuff being shared. It's pretty fun. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is, on my other show, The Spawn Chunks, we do what's called a quarterly hangout, because we've unlocked that through Patreon support. It's just one of the benefits that we do, where we sit down and we talk to the patrons about what the show is and how it's doing and what our plans are for the future. I don't really have that with the Citadel Cafe, because it's a pretty small community, but I thought every once in a while I would take this part of the Internet Minute and kind of like pose some questions out there to the listeners, but also to the patrons specifically, because, I mean, hey, you're the ones that are financially supporting the show. Are you in the Discord chat? Do you enjoy the Discord chat? Are there things about the Discord or other benefits that you'd like to see on Patreon? Let me know. Email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and say, hey, Joel, I'd really like you to talk about this in a bonus episode, or I'd like to see this room in the Discord, or I'd like to have, you know, this kind of thing happen more often. Because it helps me make the perks on the Patreon more attractive to potential people that want to back the show. Now, to be clear, Patreon is meant to be a venue for those that want to support the show to do so. The perks are more extra. It's not like the perks are supposed to have the dollar value attached to them. It's more about, I want to support the show for a buck, and hey, cool, I get access to the Discord too. It's less about a paywall and more about like, well, if you'd like to support the show, great. If not, it's no big deal. There are lots of ways to support the show without financial involvement. You can just tell friends about it. We've been talking on the Spawn Chunks a lot about spreading the word and getting our patrons to kind of share it with friends. And I was at a podcasting conference actually not too long ago, and still, with all the social media and all the digital means that are available to us, recommending podcasts to friends, personal recommendation, is still the number one way that podcasts are shared and engaged with. So if you like the Citadel Cafe and you have friends that might enjoy it, then as I say on the Spawn Chunks, poke them in the arm and say, hey, this is cool, you should listen to it too. Because the more people that listen to the show, the higher percentage eventually we might get more people coming on board in the Patreon, which means I can do more with the show. You know, like I can put more time into it and we can get more out of it. So again, thank you to all the people on Patreon that are supporting us. It's patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. I really much appreciate it. And I really like engaging and chatting with everybody in the Discord. So check it out if you have time. And if you have any questions, just drop me a line either on Twitter, I'm at Joel Duggan, or like I said, email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, and I'd be happy to fill you in. Now, I do have an internet pick. This is not just an empty plug. It's been a little while, and I've gotten out of the habit of picking some cool stuff to share on the internet here. However, this is really cool. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. I believe it's Lee ZK. I think that's how you pronounce it. I could be wrong.
ZK.
ZK? Okay. So I'm glad I have you on the show. This is almost specific. This is almost specific because you're on the show. But she's a Chinese artist and food expert. Okay. I know next to nothing about her because everything from her videos to her blog posts to everything is all Chinese. So I don't read.
There's no subtitles?
No, I don't read or speak Chinese at all. So I only have the pantomime of the video to go on. But she does these very cool, very well edited and very calm videos about traditional Chinese cooking. It usually starts off with her going out into a garden or a farm or the forest or something and collecting the thing that she's going to use for food. And then she will...
Really high production value?
Extraordinarily high production
value. Lizzie Chi. I've seen her. So it's actually called... is it Lizzie Chi?
Is it? Okay. It's Z-I-K-I-I. I used Google Translate to give me a translation, so I don't know how accurate it is.
L-I-Z-I-Q-I. Lizzie Chi.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's K-I is what Google told me, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. I think... I'm actually just clicking on the link right now just to double check.
Just to double check. Yeah, please do.
I've watched some of her stuff. I think her latest video, she makes like a wool cloak, like entirely from scratch. From like, yeah, I've watched her before, from like shearing the sheep to like,
yeah, it's crazy,
dyeing the wool herself. It's, she's insane. She's beautiful.
Oh yeah, and it's, and everything's very calm. There's usually some music in the background, but I find it a little bit, it's hard because like I'm looking at the food that she's making. I'm just like, that looks really good, but I kind of don't know what it is, because she'll put the subtitles up, but they're in Chinese. So it's like, I don't know what that says. Like, is that jam? Yeah. Is it preserve? Is it something? I don't know.
I think people have gone in and tried to start translating anything that she's speaking or any text that's there.
Maybe.
You can turn on the closed captions on some of the videos. Yeah.
I never thought about turning on closed captions. That'd be a good idea too. But
I know a lot of people will contribute. Like even like if they speak Chinese and maybe they also speak English, they'll just translate.
Mm-hmm. But they're still just lovely little kind of breaks from your usual social media kind of memes and fluff mm-hmm. that go around. They feel meaningful. Like they feel they're very well produced. They're an artistic presentation about traditional food and cooking. And I really enjoy the pace that they have. And they take a long time to make too, because in some cases, like she's leaving like peaches in sugar and spice out over seasons to ferment, you know? So like the video can't be completed until like the winter is over. So they start in the fall with filming some content and then they can't finish it until later, you know?
Yeah.
Unless they're faking it, which I doubt they are.
But
it's she's also, I believe, I want to say, I'm assuming that it's her grandmother that she's either living with or cooking with or doing something with, and she's the cutest old lady ever. It's like she kind of shuffles around and she's always just kind of like over her shoulder and like, oh, those ingredients look good, I'm gonna have some. And she just kind of like grabs a peach or a berry and then you know, walks away. And it's just like, it's very, very endearing. And it feels like, despite not speaking the language, that I'm still learning something about the culture.
Yes.
While I'm watching it.
It's beautiful. She always has like a little lamb. There's like puppies that kind of hang around all the time.
Yeah.
Like there's just animals everywhere. And like there's no, I don't know. It's like everything is like a nice little story in each of her videos. And none of them are very, I think her longest one that I'm looking at right now is maybe 11 minutes.
Yeah, they're pretty short.
Maybe. They're pretty short. But like they're beautiful and they're very calming. And I think the first one I found was like, like how to make a cloak, like how to make a cloak out of wool. And it's literally like, you know, I was amazed with it because she, like shears the sheep herself and then she spins the wool and then she dyes the wool and then she knits the cloak all herself from scratch, like literally from scratch. And it is mind blowing to my brain. Like I was just like, what do you mean? This is insane. And it's, like her dyes are all made of like fruit and like plants and everything. It's all natural stuff. And it's like taking it back to like when you would do everything from scratch, like from like you had no factory made anything. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's, I agree. Nice. And like I said, a nice change of pace. So if you're looking for something different, I can't really spell out the URLs because they're all gobbledygook, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But I'll have the links and I'll probably embed one of her YouTube videos onto the show note page at thesiddhulcafe.com. That is incidentally where you can go to find out all kinds of things about what Megan and I have talked about today. You can check out other episodes of The Siddhul Cafe. The music, of course, was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us, like I mentioned, at thesiddhulcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. We are available on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify, and maybe YouTube if I can get off my butt and get Megan to help me out with that. We've talked about that before.
I need to put up more of my stuff too.
But that's going to be it. You can find me and everything that I do at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio. You can check out my other podcast about Minecraft at thesponchunks.com. And it's just my name, Joel Duggan, on all social media. I am very, very easy to find. I'm going to point you towards Twitch, where I've been doing a lot of art and streaming some new designs for Pixel Riffs there. So check that out too. Megan, where can people find you online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Oh, Megan Townsend. I'm posting a lot more YouTube videos from my China series, which will be ending very soon. And there's some more of my face on Instagram if you want to see that.
You have been listening to The Siddhul Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.